if I focus on myself and my effort in everything I do, that's all I can do. And the result in the end, compared to others, is not fully within my control. In a perfect world, you would just be able to do every session as prescribed because it is prescribed in that way for a reason. But the world isn't perfect, and sometimes things comes in between, and it could be anything from sleep to injuries, just to some niggle that day. And I tried the strategy to just push through, and that has just led to that more things needs to be changed in the future.
Hey Emma, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Good to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Just
How are
fine on
you
this
doing?
beautiful Monday. I'm doing pretty good. The sun is shining and the weather's turning slowly from the winter to spring, which is always a nice time of the year.
Yeah, same here.
For the three people listening that don't know you yet, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what you do?
My name is Emma. I'm a CrossFit athlete, and I'm training all day.
Except for today.
Except for today, exactly. Today is a rest day. I found CrossFit 2017, and that's been a big part of my life since.
It's been a fair few years now. How did you first encounter CrossFit? How did you come across it?
It was I lived in the Netherlands and worked at IKEA. And when I moved there, I just didn't have that much to do outside of work. So I found a CrossFit box and I joined, and I loved it.
What were you? Let's bring it back a little bit. Where did you grow up?
Sweden, small little village in Sweden.
Okay, and what did you enjoy doing in your youth? Did you play any sports?
Yeah, I was very active. I loved sports. When I was younger, it was swimming, football, and floorball. And then I got problems with my knees, so swimming was pretty much the only thing I could continue to do.
What happened with your knees?
I had Osgood Slattish.
Okay.
If you know, it's something you can get in your knees when you grow, basically, and you
Okay.
are too active. So it's almost like your like muscles are growing faster than the like joints and ligaments, and it becomes this, you get this little bump. Almost like, oh yeah, almost below the patella tendon. And it's just it gets very painful to run and jump. And it's something you grow out of it when your body is ca catching up.
Yeah.
I continue to have a problem with that, and it created like small, almost bone pieces that was then under the tendon that
Okay.
I then had surgery on like 6 months after finding CrossFit.
Okay. It was okay, so it's something you're supposed to grow out of, but you didn't, and you had to have surgery. What was the time span between the moment you started having those knee issues and the surgery that you got?
Oh, probably like 10, 15 years.
And this whole time you experienced some, was it discomfort? Was it pain? How does it manifest?
So it was a problem when I was growing up, but it was never a problem with swimming, and that's what I end up doing for 12 years. So I didn't. I grew out of it when I was maybe 16, and what I with because I was mainly doing swimming then, I didn't feel it, and then I didn't like start to feel it again until I found CrossFit. So it was more with like the running and jumping and squatting then, and because it was actually like bone pieces under the tendon, it's like no way you can rehab that, because every time you bend the knee, it's just something there that's irritating. So it was quite an easy choice to have a surgery on the knee, and it's been good since.
Okay, so it's something that resolved itself once you got the surgery.
Yeah.
If we go back to your swimming years, what main memories do you carry with you today from that time?
That's a good question. So it was a lot of training. It's a lot of hours spent looking at the bottom of the pool. But I really enjoyed it, and it was also it's an individual sport, and because you're in the pool, like you spend a lot of time with yourself. Not you can't really talk to anyone else, but you're still there as a group every session, and that you still have like the group dynamics and everything before and after the session. And I really enjoyed that, and I think that's why I enjoyed CrossFit so much when I found it, to go to classes and you get the same kind of like dynamic, like you deal with a group, you work hard. Yeah.
The individual pursuit, but within a group setting.
Exactly.
Do you remember what your training weeks looked like when you were swimming?
So from I moved away from home when I was 16 and started, what would that be? Would probably be equal to high school, 16 to 19. And then I moved away to swim for a school, as a subject. And then we had pretty much all sessions are at least 2 hours in the pool, and it was morning sessions, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and evening sessions, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
In that case, was school kind of built around your training, or did you have to wake up really early, do your training, and then go to a regular hour school and then train really late?
No, that was the benefit of moving away and doing it as a subject in school, because the 3 morning sessions a week, we had no scheduled classes until 12 o'clock. So we swam pretty much between 8 to 11, and then you went to school and had lunch, and then the rest of the day was in school. So I didn't need to go up that early. And I still got a lot of training done, so it's really nice.
What event did you compete in? What was your key distance or the one you preferred?
My favorite was 200 butterfly.
Okay.
But I also did compete in 50 and 100 butterfly, and 50, 100, and 200 freestyle.
Would you say that in the pool you were a pretty powerful athlete? You were better on the short stuff than on the longer stuff?
I would say, I would say so, yeah.
Is that something that you see in yourself now in CrossFit? You prefer the short stuff to the long stuff, or not necessarily?
No, not necessarily.
Was that something that you noticed right off the bat, where you were maybe pretty balanced in terms of the short and the long stuff, or did you start being a more powerful athlete and then kind of built on that and broaden your spectrum of competency in the sport?
I was like, swimming is, even though the distance that I competed in back then, swimming was still so much training. Like you swim for 2 hours straight every session. So even though that's the more like powerful distances to compete in, I still become more endurant. So I still, the longer workouts in CrossFit has always been like easier or better for me than the shorter ones. And I think especially because I spent so many years in a pool with water as the only resistance, like building strength and stability has been more of a challenge than sitting on a rower for 20 minutes.
The
For
volume
example.
aspect of CrossFit and of training is definitely not where you had any issues, because you do you feel like you had a good carryover from that background in swimming into your CrossFit training?
Yeah, I do.
And did you do any, what do you call it, dry land training when you were swimming? Anything in the gym or with weights?
Not anything with weights, just body weight, but a lot of core work mainly.
The is that something you would do differently if you could go back and coach yourself when you were 16 in the pool? Would you add weights outside of the pool? Do you think it would help you in the water?
Yeah, definitely.
What would have been the biggest difference in your opinion?
I think it would, especially if you look like we talked about before, the sprint distances, like 50 meters is competing 50 meters is below 30 seconds, but you train for 2 hours. So, and yeah, like to change all that whole. I think swimming has developed a lot since I stopped. And I think just change the whole structure. If you want to compete in the sprint distance, like to train very differently and with weights and other resistance training, even like jumps and stuff, just be more explosive. Even just like the start or the turn in swimming, you get more explosive and get more out of that. It's quite a big part in a 50-meter race if you can have like a good start.
I guess the shorter the race, the more the takeoff and then the turn make a big difference. And if I'm not mistaken, most of the top swimmers spend most of their time underwater on the first leg. Is that right? Or at least a significant part. So the pushing off and then maintaining the speed even underwater is very important.
Yeah, so that basically the harder you can push off the wall, like the more you like the easier, or not easier, but the more you can get off of each turn, yeah, the less energy you need to spend to get further. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. With that background in swimming, how much swimming do you do today?
Not that much.
It once a week? Is it once every couple of weeks?
Yeah, I would say it depends a little bit on the season, where I'm in the season, but everything from once a week to once every other week.
And does that intensify getting closer to the games, where you'll probably see more swimming than in the other stages of competition, if we think about the CrossFit season?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What's the most you would do leading up to the games in the pool or just in open water?
I think it's pretty, yeah, one session a week, maybe two at some point, but it's like last year there was no swimming, and now we're moving to a new location, so you don't I don't I want to like keep on top of it because if it shows up, it's a good event for me, but I don't want to spend too much of my time, so I would say once a week is pretty much enough to stay on top of it even before a competition where it would show up.
Is there any way for let's say a specialist like you in swimming, as you have been for over a decade, when you were younger, is there any way for somebody who doesn't have those years of practice to, quote unquote, catch up on the swimming training in order to, be able to beat you in a swim event, in a pure swim event, for example? Or is it still a big disparity between you and some others that have a swimming background and then the other competitors that didn't grow up swimming, didn't do years and years and thousands of hours of swimming? What's that, say, gap like between the ex swimmers and the non ex swimmers?
I think it is quite a lot, and I think it's quite a lot to I mean, it should be difficult to catch up on 12 years of of doing a sport, but there is like a lot of athletes that are not ex-swimmers that maybe most of them are competing against. So if you can just beat them, that's a lot of points. So there is still a lot to be gained for people that haven't been swimming that much. But I do think that like the technical work of swimming is more important than going and doing like hard swimming sessions for non-swimmers.
Would you say there's an optimal maybe session duration to start with when you're a beginner in technique? I can imagine I don't swim very well. I can swim, but I don't know the technical way of swimming, and I can't breathe for shit in the water. Is it very draining at the beginning for beginners in the water? Should they only do, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of technical work and then, get out, move on to something else? Should they spend longer in the pool? Should they do that multiple times a week? What would you do if you were, helping a beginner try to get to grapple with swimming?
I mean, it always depends on how much, like, how much you want to get better at it. If that is like a big priority, like, then I would spend 2 or 3 times a week. But like you said, maybe not that long from the beginning. However, if you do technical work with a lot of rest in between and like assessing how you move and how you can move better in the water, that is not as draining as just going there and just swim. So then you can do more. But then at some point as well, you also need to, even though you're fit, you don't really need to get fitter in the water. You just need to get technically better and then used to breathe hard while you're in the water. So you still need to do like some harder sessions when you're technically good enough to be able to swim fast as well.
What's the margin of progress on technical work in swimming? How many, after 12 years of swimming, were you still improving your technique?
Yeah. I mean, it's you can go, it's so like you can be so detailed. It's the same thing, I guess, like for a weightlifter, even though you've been weightlifting for 12 years, you can still get better.
Yeah, that's something that always struck me in weightlifting, watching, world championships and stuff like that. And even in the warm-up hall, the coaches are still coaching the guys and the gals that have been doing that their whole life, and they're about to step on the stage, but there's still little technical pointers that they have. And I feel like maybe in the CrossFit space, when we think and talk about technical movements, whether it's gymnastics, whether it's something like the rower or swimming, I feel like sometimes we work a little bit on technique, and then you say, okay, that's good enough. Now I can just work on the capacity and the volume and the intensity. Do you feel like there should be more of an emphasis, especially for competitors, on the technical aspects of all those technical movements in the sport?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I really, myself, I really like to enjoy to watch other people and see, or other athletes and see how they move and how they do certain movements, even movements that I might already be quite good at, because maybe they do like a tiny little bit difference, and then that's like a big difference in the long term. And I really like to, oh, I really enjoy watching other people move and see if I can change anything in the way I move and if that is for the better. And I guess that is just like difference from athletes to athletes.
Right.
But it can make a big difference. So for me, it's worth it.
I want to come back to that in a little bit. First, can we talk about the transition or the time between your, let's call it your swimming career, and then your transition to CrossFit? Did you go straight from one to the other? Did you have intermediate steps or other sports that you explored in between?
So I went from swimming to the gym. And while training at the gym, I decided I was going to compete in body fitness. And I did that twice. And then after that, I graduated from university and went to travel for a year. And after the travels is when I moved to the Netherlands, and then I found CrossFit.
Okay. What was your experience like with the body fitness competition?
I really enjoyed the challenge of like putting myself through what you need to put yourself through to go up on stage and do that. I did not enjoy to compete in body fitness.
Okay, so it was the process more than the outcome that you were after.
Yeah, definitely. And it was like a great experience for me, but I would never ever do it again.
What useful lessons have you taken from that experience into your CrossFit career now, if any?
So the experience was mostly like diet based, or like how I react to different diets, or different like how to change depending on what the goal were. So how I eat to build more muscles and to put on more mass, and how I change that then to lose as much fat as possible to be able to go on the stage and compete. And also what I am capable of, because it's a completely different challenge to compete in something like CrossFit. And being on like that low calorie for that long, it's not healthy and it's not good, but it was a very good experience, and it was interesting to see like how mentally tough you can be when you decide that you want to do something.
If we think about your CrossFit endeavors from the time you started, when did you first get attracted by the competitive side of CrossFit?
So I found it 2017, and I did CrossFit classes for about a year, and then the box owner of where I started, he was like very passionate about CrossFit and competing, and he helped me out a lot. And I come from a very competitive background. Like, I've been competing in sports since I was very young, and I am very competitive, but at that point I was also a bit tired of competing, because it can sometimes take up too much of your attention when you do something to compete in it. Like, the competition becomes the most important part. And I didn't want my I enjoyed CrossFit so much, and I didn't want anything to take that joy away. I just wanted to enjoy, to train and work hard for me, and not for anything, and not for any competition or anything special. So the box owner of this box, he thought that I should compete, and I was very against it in the beginning. But after some time, it went really well, and I started to do better and better. And I thought, yeah, okay, I'll try to do this qualification, and that was for French Throwdown.
Okay. What
And I
year was that?
qualified. That was 2017.
2017. Okay. So the year
Yes.
you started.
Yes.
Okay. So, but it did take a little bit of convincing for you to get on the competition floor.
Yeah, not that long when you say, but he did try. I remember he did try for a while, and I remember being very against it in the beginning.
What, how did you feel once you did it? Are you glad you did it at that point?
I didn't enjoy to compete that much because it was still a couple of movements that I couldn't do.
Do you remember which ones?
I couldn't do bar muscle ups.
Okay.
Luckily enough, there was only bar muscle ups in the final, and I didn't make it to the
How convenient.
final. But there were one workout with, I don't remember the exact distance, but it was rowing, ski erg, and double unders. And I won that workout.
Nice. Was that your first win on the competition floor?
Yes.
2017 French Throwdown.
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Was it in
So you.
the velodrome already? And the indoor
No.
cycling was it in a different spot before?
Yeah, it was
Oh,
that
okay.
big outdoor track,
Okay.
and then it was like a smaller indoor space, but it was not in the velodrome.
Okay. Besides that first win, what were your favorite memories from that first competition?
Yeah, it was probably that, but I was very good at some stuff. Like just the pure work, like row and ski and double unders, and then, like I said, I couldn't do other stuff like bar muscle ups. I really struggled with handstand walk, more the skill. So I really enjoyed to compete in the things I felt like I could actually compete in. In the events that I felt like I couldn't really put up any competition, it wasn't so fun. And I think that just comes down to like you are naturally competitive and you want to be able to go out and compete, not just trying to do the movements.
Yeah, I guess when you can't actually express your potential because you're limited, I guess technically or by the movement itself, it's definitely not as fun as when you can just, let's see what we have.
Yeah, but it definitely like it lit a fire, and it was a good first competition.
A good starting point. So how did you operate after that? Did you kind of jump right into the deep end of the pool and start competing frequently, or did you have a more kind of a long-term outlook and an approach to it? What did you do after that first competition?
No, I think it was more of a long term. I felt like I wanted to learn to do all the basic movements to be able to compete better. In the end of 2017, the project I worked with IKEA was up. So I decided then to move back to Sweden, but to Stockholm instead, and I really loved CrossFit at this point, and I wanted to be able to train more. So I applied for work to work at the CrossFit box and started to coach and do some other tasks that you do in a box, which allowed me to spend a lot more time training. And then 2018 is when I did my first open.
How did that go?
It went very well. I qualified for regionals.
Nice. Where were regionals back then?
Berlin.
Berlin, okay. And how did that go?
All right. I think I came 13th or 14th.
What were your main, say, limitations at that point? What was holding you back, given the potential you had and work capacity you had built over the years and by starting CrossFit, what was still missing for you to kind of bridge the gap with the front runners?
It was still the gymnastics. It was I remember one event was with ring muscle ups, handstand walk ramp, and pistols. And I think I got over the ramp once. So yeah, still the gymnastics.
Okay, is this still today your quote unquote nemesis? Is it the thing you have to work the hardest at, or has that shifted now?
I think both yes and no. Ring muscle ups is something that I've got very good at. Handstand walk has got better as well, but it is still, it's like the skills are getting more difficult and difficult for every year, and it is still like the highest skill that is the most difficult for me.
What was your training week like when you made that shift, went back to Sweden, started training, I guess, almost full time, or at least part time, and you were working in the box, so it was convenient from that standpoint. How many hours a week did you train then, and how many do you train today?
I mean, I think I did the same, pretty much the same amount of sessions. The sessions has just become longer and more in depth. It's pretty much like the normal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, two sessions a day, Thursday, rest or recovery day, and then Friday and Saturday, two sessions a day, and Sunday, rest or recovery.
Right, so three on, one off, two on, one off. And so you say the number of the sessions didn't change much, but the total time, total training time has evolved.
Yeah.
So how many hours would you estimate you used to train, and how many do you train today?
Oh, what would that be? Maybe more like three, 4 hours. The day before, and now it's more like six, with that's including like everything, like warm ups, and yeah.
Right. So probably something around, say, 15 hours a week before, and now closer to 25 or above.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's did you see did you have a fairly linear progression when it comes to the time of the total training time, if we take that as a metric, over the years? Did that kind of just grow organically, and you started, adding more time as you got fitter and could do more work and progressed?
Yeah, also when I could work less.
I guess that was a big shift. How much of an impact did that have on your training and your recovery?
Yeah, a lot. A lot. So, but I worked up until, oh, when would that be? 20. Yeah, 2022, pretty much.
So since 2022, you've been full-time training.
Yeah.
You qualified for the games before that, though.
Yeah.
Do you think, given the evolution of the sport, the depth of the field, is that something that you could do today if you were still working part-time?
Yeah, I think so. It would just be less optimal.
Right. What are the main changes that you've seen and made to your training between the time you started then, 2017, started competing, and today?
I think it's a lot more focused on specific things that I can get better at. I mean, the longer you do a sport, the more of a, let's call it like athlete profile you create, and you have like your weaknesses and your strength, and where can you work to get the most bang for the bucks in the end. In the beginning, it was more like just go in, work hard, go home.
Shotgun approach.
Yeah. And it was also much less movement work needed and all of that. So mo a lot more taking care of the body and listen to the body and train in a way that is working for me and the way that will work in the long term, not just for 3 weeks and then I crashed it. And also working more on specific things that will make my athlete profile better in total.
When you talk about this, is there phases where aspects of your training that you have mastered already and you're really good at, do you leave them aside or do you minimize them to the maximum, let's say, in order to give as much space as possible to work on those weaknesses and the specifics that you need? What I mean is how much does your training change throughout the year away from competitions, close to competitions?
But I wouldn't say it. I don't take anything completely away or out of training unless I can't do it because of an injury or pain.
Mm-hmm.
I like to keep it all in there, but how much attention it gets depends on how much I need to work on it.
When you talk about taking care of the body, listening to the body, are there specific practices or types of sessions that you put in place that help you with this aspect of training? If we think of the hard stuff as the working out, quote unquote, what's the working in part for you? How do you do that?
So we call it movement mechanics,
mm-hmm.
Before every session.
What does that
and
look like?
Usually, so it's more of it in the first session of the day. And then on the second session, it's usually a little bit less because then you already done it in the morning. And it's just specific things for me that I need to work on to get my body to work better. I'm naturally quite mobile and very unstable, so I need to work a lot on my stability and switch things on, especially before heavy lifts, even before running, or otherwise it will just... Yeah, I would not move that well and things would just be a bit not so stable.
How long does that take you before the first session of the day and then the recall in the afternoon? Is that maybe half an hour in the morning, 15, 20 minutes in the afternoon? Is it more? Is it less?
No, it's pretty much around those time domains. It also depends. I mean, the body goes through different stuff in training, and if something hurts a bit more, maybe I need to spend some more time on that. So it's adjusted every day, but I would say it's somewhere around there.
And you said you have specific things. So are each one of those movement mechanic sessions tailored to the upcoming session, or is it a specific block that you're working on maybe this week or this month that you're trying to improve more kind of long term? How are those structured?
It's more for the upcoming session.
So for each type of session, you might have a template that you're going to use and you know that, hey, I'm going to do, you know, some heavy snatch today. So these are the basics I have to run through in order to get myself ready for that.
Yes.
And I assume there's been a significant amount of trial and error over time and finding what works for you.
Yeah. I think also, like, the body is very smart. And it's when something starts to hurt or something's not working properly, like the body starts to compensate. And it's sometimes really difficult to find the root of the issue. And I also think that sometimes the root of the issue is changing along the way. So, or for me at least, for some time, some movement mechanics or some exercises works really well. And all of a sudden, they don't work that well anymore, and I need to change them because something has changed in my body.
Right. So you have your focus, you have your system, but then you can adjust it over time if you see that it doesn't fit the needs anymore.
Yeah.
What are the key exercises for you before you do a running session? What's going to help you feel better for running?
So I work activations of my hips. And then also making sure my knees feels okay, my ankle feels okay. And before each running session, both me and David also have like a warm-up protocol to work with how would you say, just to get the feet to work better, but also like ankles and calves, and just be a bit more explosive, especially for me that I spend all that time in water. To then spend this much time on my feet and running and jumping, it that has been a big challenge to get my body to adapt to that.
Are there in that regard, specifically regarding to running, like you said, if you've spent over a decade in the water, your body isn't the most responsive when it comes to being elastic and returning that energy from a flat ground and a hard surface. So what key elements that you put in place over the last few years to be able to tolerate the amount of running you need to be able to, the amount of jumping that you have to do in the sport? What have you done to get to the where you are today and being able to do all those things, even though you maybe weren't predisposed to excel in those at the beginning?
I actually have had a lot of problem with being able to train running, jumping, and squatting at the same time. And the main problem has been my knees. They just have not been able to do it. Since the games, pretty much is the first time I think ever. Or like since the beginning that I've actually been able to train it for a while. And it's been really good. Me and David went to do a lot of testing with a sprint coach, and how to like slowly build up the resilience, and to get better. Not just by running, but by doing all of these drills before. And I think working with our coach, Philip Biscard, as well, he has helped me a lot about how to stay on top with my on top of my knees, so they don't go to the part where I have to take all the running out, all the squatting out. And it's just, I've been getting a lot of help, and I think it has just taking a long time because you just need to learn how your body works.
So we have those movement mechanic pieces. Are there other parts of the training week that are dedicated to maybe a bit more introspective work in regards to how the body feels, whether it's massages, physios, and other such maybe softer quote unquote practices that you also include?
Yeah, based on need. It's not something I have scheduled every week.
And usually, how often do you need those type of interventions?
So it's more in the season. I would say more when it's getting closer to semis and the games. During the off season, I don't usually don't feel the need for it that much because the intensity isn't really as high, and I can spend more time taking care of it myself as well.
Right. So in the off season, maybe the less pressure, less intensity, and more of a building kind of focus. And then obviously when you get closer to competition, you're in execution mode. It's time to go to work. And that's when you maybe need a bit more assistance on the maintenance of the body.
Yeah, maybe once every second week or something. I try to go and get some massage or some treatment.
I know you focus a lot on the mental aspect of things. Is there any specific practices that you use, whether it's meditation, different types of breathing, or anything, quote unquote, like that in that broader category that you've found useful and that you use frequently today?
So I work with a mental coach as well, and it's two things that I do every day, and one thing is a journal where I just reflect on the day in the evening, and the other thing is what he calls a 5-minute flow, and I would say it's a little bit like meditation, but you have your specific things that you are meditating about, and it's towards performance.
Would you put it in the bucket of visualization, or is it just specific mental work on a certain aspect of your fitness?
Part of it is visualization, yeah, and it's visualization of success in the past, what I'm doing right now in training, and the next competition. So it's three different parts.
How long have you been using that approach? Since when have you been doing this?
Since semifinals last year.
What has that changed in your training, your state of mind, just in general? What have those practices had as an impact on you in general?
I think it's helped me to change the way that I'm thinking about training and competition.
How so?
In a way that I focus more on the process, and not just the competition, and not just the end results. It's just I look at everything as a process, and it's easier to get in more of a flow and not get so stressed about the results all the time, and understand that if I focus on myself and my effort in everything I do, that's all I can do. And the result in the end, compared to others, is not fully within my control. So if I let go of thinking about that, like, I can save a lot of energy and focus and thinking about what I need to do. Does it make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. I had a very similar conversation last week with my coach Vincent, who's helping me now with my training in general. I've had some back issues for a long time, and so getting through this is taking obviously some time. But the analogy he used is, you're building a wall. You're building a wall, and every training session, everything that you do is a brick that you add to the wall. And in the end, the outcome is going to be what it is, like you just said. And if we just focus on putting one brick on the wall at a time and making the strongest wall as you can, then this is all you can do. This is what you need to focus on. And in the end, a stronger wall is going to, get you to where you want to, or at least you're going to be trending in the right direction. And even if the outcome is not what you want, even if the result in the competition is not what you want, you've still built all of this, and it's not for nothing. Right, because there's always the next chance. And from a just from a psychological standpoint, that helped a lot in alleviating some of the, like you said, the stress of just thinking of the outcome. Yes, but what if it doesn't, dot dot dot. Just taking that out of the equation and just saying, okay, I'm just gonna, put the bricks one on the other and just keep putting the bricks together, because this is what I can focus on. It's, I guess, a very almost very stoic approach to training. Would you see it that way?
Yeah, I think it's as fast as you start to competing something, it's very easy to just compare yourself with others all the time. And I think that takes the joy out of it, because it will always be someone that is better at something. And then you will always feel like you need to be somewhere else.
If we come back to the communication and relationship you have with your coach, with Philip, how does the interaction work? He writes something for you, you do it, or you guys have a conversation, then he writes, then you discuss it. How much back and forth is there between the programming and the execution of the program itself?
It's quite a lot back and forth.
what are the main points of communication between you two? What does he ask you often? What feedback do you give him?
All the feedback, everything. we got different meetings throughout the year where we decide what to focus on, and he explains all his thoughts about the program and why we're doing what we're doing. And then every week I give him feedback of every session. And he evaluates before he writes the next week.
How flexible are you with the program when it comes to how you feel on the day or on the session? Do you often execute the session exactly as it was planned? Do you have the liberty to modify it as you see fit? Do you have to run it through him first?
I genuinely want to just execute it how it is written.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time I do, but I've also learned that it is impossible for anyone else to know how I feel on a daily basis, and sometimes things needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am unsure about how to change it, I have a conversation with Philip, and if I feel that I know how to change it, then I would just change it, and I will communicate that with him afterwards.
Is that something you've always done, or is that something you've learned to do more as the year went on in your CrossFit training and now as a professional athlete training full time? Or did you already have that instinct to listen to yourself a lot at the beginning?
No, that's something I learned.
Were there some hardship you had to go through to learn those lessons?
Yeah, definitely. I even like even during what would that have been like during my first year and a half, like I got sent home from the box in the Netherlands because I was just exhausted, but I still wanted to do the session. And I think everyone, like in a perfect world, you would just be able to do every session as prescribed, because it is prescribed in that way for a reason. And I fully trust Philip that he has been right in everything for me, because that's in a perfect world, I should just do it as it is. But the world isn't perfect, and sometimes things comes in between, and it could be anything from sleep to injuries, just to some niggle that day. And I tried the strategy to just push through, and that has just led to that more things needs to be changed in the future. I would say I've learned the hard way that it's better to do some small changes if I need to, before I push her harder than need to make bigger changes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think it is a key part of training, especially when you spend a lot of time training, right? Because if you overdo it even by 1 or 2%, that compounds session to session. And like you said, now next week, you got to change a whole bunch of things because you've just pushed the machine a little bit too far. And now we have to pull it back even farther. So it's playing on that razor's edge every day and trying to do what's perfect, but then also thinking of not only that session, but the next session, right? How much has your outlook changed in regards to this, between obviously focusing on the work at hand and doing the session, but then also thinking that it's not that session that's going to, you know, make you win or make you reach your goal. It's that session and the next one and the next one. Do you find yourself having a different outlook on training in that regard now?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think in terms of like working on your like mental strength and stuff as well, like learning that it is the whole process that matters. It's just not what I'm doing today, it's what I'm doing the next month. And how to make the whole month as good as possible, not just the first week of training.
You talked about the importance of knowing yourself, knowing your athletic profile, and then in that, knowing what your limitations are and what you need to work on. How do you go about finding or determining what needs the most focus right now, and then how do you work on it?
I think competition is a very good guide of what you need to work on. If you then need to, I mean, I can see that I need to work on my running, but then maybe I need to understand more of that, like specifically, what do I need to get better at when it comes to running? Then other tests needs to be done. And for me, one thing has been my breathing, and especially for running, because it's that very high heart rate and not much resistance. And I've had asthma since I was 3 years old. And also, when I was younger, I also had a problem with my vocal cords while breathing. So I was already then going and doing like sort of breathing training with that. And I've always been, I know it's like the breathing in everything has been a limiting factor for me. And I've been working with it. Even when I was swimming, I was working with different types of breathing training. So to find that it's usually that I feel like I'm breathing too hard to go faster when I'm running, that means that I need to learn to breathe better while running. That is like my main limitation.
Let's take it way back to the swimming then, since you've been focusing on that as one of your main limiters, right? For essentially your whole athletic career, it sounds like.
Yeah.
What exercises, what did you put in place back then? What did you do through the years? If you can kind of run us through the different approaches that you took in order to gain more control, become more endurant, and breathe better in your activities. What are all the things that you've tried, and what's worked the best for you so far?
Well, I think I tried pretty much every single breathing training device that you can try.
Yeah.
I remember this must be like 10, 15 years ago. I don't remember the brand of it, but it was like a pink device that you breathe with resistance.
Right.
I think that was the first thing I tried while I was swimming.
Okay.
Also, besides working on the breathing on the side of training, just be very aware of your breathing when you exercise or training as well, and learning how to breathe in water properly when I was swimming was a big part of it. One thing with the asthma as well. So for me, cold weather is one thing that triggers it.
Mm-hmm.
It really like it makes it really difficult to breathe. Another thing is stress. So if I'm in a session where I'm feeling stressed as well, it gets worse. And that is, the cold weather is not really within my control, but the stress is within my control. And once it starts to like feel panicked, I can't breathe, like then it's just downhill from there.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to control it when I start to feel it, instead of just like ignore it and let go, and then I need to completely stop what I'm doing.
And is that something that you've done more in training, or did you really break it down and go back to maybe breathing really slowly or controlling your breath in a very quiet environment? And which approach did you take, and what worked for you?
I would say I did both.
Hmm.
But part of it, part of feeling stressed when you're in training is, or was for me, and is mentally that I'm feeling like I'm either not going doing good enough, or like I should go faster, or this is like much harder than what it should be, and it makes me feel stressed, and then you get this like, yeah, really difficult to breathe. So part of it was the breathing training, but part of it was also working mentally to not get stressed in the situation. Yeah, and then I've also worked with the Breathe Way Better and you in the training program, and that has so far been the best breathing training that I've done.
Why? And the reason I ask is I'm always curious because, like you said, there are many devices on the market. There's many practices, many approaches to breathing. And I'm always interested to understand how it helps some people more than others and why. What was different between, say, the resistance devices that you've used in the past, that, like you said, apply a resistance to the way that you breathe? So it's almost like loading the breathing, right? It's almost like weight training for breathing. What has been the main difference between those tools that you've used and the BreatheWay?
So I think with the Breathe Way, I breathe the same way as I do when I'm training, but I don't have any resistance when I'm training. So just training with resistance didn't get me better to understand on how I need to breathe while I'm training. It might have like got this stronger, but it didn't make me understand how to breathe when my heart rate is high and my breathing rate is high, like the Breathe Way Better does.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's usually why I say that I think the resistance devices can be interesting, but unless you first understand how you can move the air yourself and breathe optimally with what you already have control of, it's almost like adding a heavy barbell to someone who's never done a full squat before. I'd rather they do a full squat with no weight first, and then we can start adding the weight and making sure they maintain the range. Another difficulty with breathing is that when you add loading with the resistance, you actually reduce how much volume you can access because at some point your maximum inspiratory pressure is equal or lower than the actual resistance that you're facing. So essentially, the more resistance you apply, the shorter your breath becomes because you cannot use the same amount of volume. And I think that's probably one of the upsides of the BreatheWay is, like you said, it doesn't add any resistance, so you can use essentially the whole volume that you have accessible, and you get that almost tactile feedback of how much air am I breathing in, how much air am I breathing out. If we take that concretely, what has changed in your training since you've started doing this or practicing with the BreatheWay?
I feel like it's easier for me to be more aware of my breathing while breathing heavy.
Is that something you didn't do before, couldn't do before?
I think I've done it before, since it's been a limiting factor for me like my whole athletic career, but I've got a better understanding of how to breathe after training with the Breathe Way Better.
And because it's very individual and everybody answers that a little bit differently, now that you've run the program once, done the exercises, where do you find it the most helpful for you? And I say for you really because one thing that's interesting with the breathing is everybody responds differently. Some people get very fatigued from it, some people not at all, some people find it very useful, others less. So where does that help you the most? Where do you see it the most be the most beneficial in your overall practice and in your training?
I think the most, I think after being through the program or training with it for a while, the bo most benefit for me is to do it as a warm up before I compete or before I do a session, because usually I need to do a lot of warm up to be ready to breathe hard. And even at competitions, it's when I was swimming as well, it took me one or two or three events or races to be ready. Part of that, I think, is mental, but part of it was also like for the body to actually be ready.
Mm-hmm.
And to do the breathing warm up before makes it, it just makes me more ready for the workout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting that you say that. I think that's what I hear the most is actually using it in the warm up, especially when there's going to be something short, intense, where you're going to be breathing hard right out the gate. And I think, like you said, getting your breathing warmed up just by regular means. I mean, you can do it, but the way I understand it, essentially when you start moving, your muscles move first. So they're already in play. Your heart obviously follows to bring the blood and the oxygen around, but the breathing doesn't really get heavy until you're, say, 2 minutes into a fairly hard effort. So even if you push yourself for a minute, a minute and a half, and do some intervals, your breathing is not going to get that taxed, let's say, or that targeted. And then the way I see it with the breathway, you're able to maybe kind of bridge that gap and hit the respiratory system directly and make sure that you feel like all the lights are green and now you're good to go.
Yeah.
What other limiters have you found in yourself and do you work on consistently in your training?
Good question. It's actually one other thing. It is because of the breathing. The breathing might not be the problem, but it's something that does because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when it is like really hard, shorter workouts, I find it really difficult to push hard enough
mm-hmm.
because I want to stay in control.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because of the breathing. I have had like workouts and sessions where I pushed hard and then like gone out of control. Like I just can't breathe and then I need to stop. So automatically I like to stay below that, which is good. Like you don't want to push it that hard, but sometimes it's not actually the breathing that is the problem. It's just like mentally I want to be in control the whole time. And that is a limiting factor because then I'm, especially at competitions, I'm missing out on that last 1-2%, especially in a workout. Looking at semifinals last year, the last workout with the echo bike and toaster bar and sandbag carry. So in a workout like that, but I push in the beginning, but then I'm getting a bit afraid to not be in control, and then I'm like stepping back instead of continue to push when I'm probably very capable of continue to push.
So it's almost just getting over that mental hurdle of going into the space where you don't yet feel fully in control and comfortable and being okay with that.
Yes.
And how are you working on that? Is it by doing more harder things? Is it by approaching it differently when you do hard things?
Yeah, a bit of both. I think, like you said, it is mentally, because if you are capable of something, it's just you just need to dare to go there. But then one thing is working on the mental side, but then, like you said, another thing is to do it more often so you can get more comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Do you have some, maybe a key session or a format that you use quite often for that purpose? Because you know it's maybe harder for you to express yourself fully in that context, or do you vary it quite often?
No, it's varied. It's just, I think it's for me to also identify like and see here is where I need to approach it like that and learn that as well.
You have a very meticulous approach to the training, and like you said, uncovering limiters, training on the little things that will make you better. I know you also do a lot outside of training in order to get the most out of your potential. You talked about, you know, testing and your running, what other types of tests have you done and have maybe helped you in that pursuit of, the 1%, the 2% that's going to make you better?
Outside of training or inside of training or outside.
Outside.
So, one thing, well, one route I chose to take is to take DNA tests. And that was a test that, or the information I got out of that test was what supplements did I need to take, and also what amount and what quality of that supplement that is suitable for me. That was really good, and it's something, because it's a DNA test, it will never change, so it will be something that you can have with you for the rest of your life. And it's really interesting how much supplements that are shit
Right.
that says that it is. Let's take vitamin D. It's easy to think if you buy any vitamin D, like that's good enough. But it's not. It's so many differences in how much like vitamin D is actually in the product that you need to have the knowledge of how much you need to be able to buy the correct product with the correct amount for to actually do anything for you.
Is that something that you investigate, or do you outsource that to somebody around you that has that knowledge or is acquiring that knowledge to help you better with those aspects of training and outside?
So I got most of the, let's say, results from the DNA testing and the person I did it with, and out of that, then I research which products that are the best, simply.
And how much has that made an impact on your overall health, recovery, training?
I mean, it's small details, but I do feel that it's definitely makes a difference when I am taking the correct supplements and the correct amounts of them.
If we think about paradigm shifts. Over the last few years, you've been competing at a high level, at the highest level in the sport of CrossFit. If you think back to, say, maybe the last 4 or 5 years, what are the biggest shifts that have happened in your mind, whether it's regarding your training, competition, yourself? What are some of the noticeable changes that you remember from the last few years?
So I've always loved to train. I love to train more than I love to compete. And when I found CrossFit, there was like, oh, I can compete in training. So it was just a perfect match. But because of that, the most important thing for me has not been so much to perform at competition. I have just wanted to get better at everything. Almost like I want to master everything, and then I compete to check how is it going. And I think the shift to actually putting everything into performing at competitions is the biggest change that had happened the last 2 years.
So describe how different it is now for you.
I think more it was, I just train a lot because I enjoy it and I'm good at it. And then I compete. Well, now I am trying to do everything in my power to perform as well as I can on a competition. So I still do all the training and the same, and I still enjoy it, but I think it's more outside of training, like trying to optimize sleep every night, optimize what I eat, supplements, or like stress, life stress, everything around it. And I love to just be home, having my routines, being able to do all the training, eat my own food, and yeah, that's just what I do most of the time now.
Think back to the beginning of our conversation when you started CrossFit. You're talking about you starting CrossFit and kind of being sick, tired of competing, or that's not what you wanted to do. How do you find the balance today between competing at the level that you compete at, which requires an extremely high level of dedication and discipline in your, like you said, your daily routine? Everything points to your next goal. Everything points to making you better for today, tomorrow, and the competition to come. How do you find the balance between this aspect of your life and the part of you that is not training, that is not competing?
It's definitely been, it's been a journey. It is difficult to find the right balance. And I think it's easy to enjoy competition and to compete when everything goes well. But to learn how to not just like, then are you really enjoy competing, or are you just enjoying doing well? I think learning to actually enjoy competing, whatever happens, is what has made the difference for me.
How close or how far are you from needing, wanting a break from competition, from, let's call it maybe competitive behavior when it comes to everyday life? Do you take such breaks maybe throughout the year, or do you see yourself taking some extra time at some point to just do it, or do you not feel that need at all?
I don't feel the need right now, but it's definitely like it goes through periods and sometimes. I think it's for me especially based on injuries. When you struggle with an injury for a long time, you start questioning a lot, and it's very easy to lose the joy of what you're doing when you can't really do it the way you want to do it. Unfortunately, I had a lot of problem with being ill from October to the end of December. So I was missing a lot of training in the end of last year. So maybe, I know that was obviously very unfortunate and not good, and but now, because I missed a lot of training, it's like a bit of a new boost. I'm not in a place where I'm feeling like I need a break, or I feel sick of it. So I hope it will continue like that for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's almost being forced to start out your year a little bit slower, but now you're hungry and you're just ready for, everything that's coming at you, 'cause you almost held back a little bit at the beginning. And maybe it's tougher the other way around when you start out hot, but it's not the right time to be at your peak, 'cause competition is 6 months, 9 months down the road, and then you get to that point and now you're tired. So I hope that, however, like you said, it's unfortunate that you had to go through that period of time, but hopefully it'll turn around to be a positive and allow you to just pedal to the metal all the way to your goals this year.
Yeah.
What are your goals this year?
I want to be better than I was last year.
Do you want to be better than you were last year against yourself? Do you want to be better than you were last year against others? How do you deal with that aspect, given that competition's different every year, the tests, the obviously the field is evolving slowly, but it's still changing. So how do you compare yourself year to year? Do you have some, let's call them objective tests or metrics that you use to say, hey, okay, this year I'm better than last year, or do you base that mainly on competitions?
I think it is based on competitions, but it's based on how I perform compared to myself. And yeah, it is different, difficult in CrossFit because you don't compete in the same, let's say, distance or event as you did last year. So you don't get a specific number if you're actually better than you were last year. But I think you get quite a good like feeling if I am better than I was last year. Like I perform better in the same type of events compared to what I would have done then. It's also like finishing the games last year. I was very happy with my performance, but I felt like I had more to give. And that is my goal to have more to give this year.
If you had one last little thing, I'll ask from you. If you have one piece of advice to give to somebody listening to you today, looking up to you and what you've accomplished throughout your career, and that wants to get to where you are today, what would be your advice to that person?
My advice would be to remember why you are doing what you are doing and like follow your gut, follow your heart, do what you want to do for you.
Emma, thank you so much for your time today. It was a real pleasure getting to know you and talking with you about your training, about you, about everything that you've put in place and evolved through over the last years. Where can people find you if they want to follow your journey?
I would say it's easiest to find me on Instagram. It's EMMTALL.
The link will be in the description of the podcast. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
You too.